Welcome to episode 24 of Pull Up with Miles and Owen. And today we have a legend in the building. You better buckle up for this intro because it's a lengthy one. She is all over the WNBA all-time leaderboards, the eighth all-time points per game scorer in WNBA history, one of only four people in WNBA history to average two steals per game. She was voted to the W25. She's an Olympian, multiple gold medals, currently playing at Athletes Unlimited. And if all that wasn't enough, you can check out her new show, Ballin' in Baltimore, on very local TV. Angel McCautry, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Burr, 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 burr.
Let's go.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No, we're so excited to talk to you. First things first, you've got a week now of Athletes Unlimited under your belt. You've done this full cycle, the draft, the new teammates, the games, and then the draft again the next day. I'm sure every new league, you've played in a bunch of leagues. I'm sure it's an adjustment all the time. But on yesterday's AU presser, Kalani Brown said that this was kind of like, for her, the first week of training camp in a W season in terms of having to learn all the new bodies and the different play styles. And there's just so many moving parts. But it looked like you were growing more and more comfortable literally every day, every game. And on Sunday afternoon, there were points that you were taking over for Team Sims in that like back and forth game. So how have you acclimated to Athletes Unlimited to this point?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm here. You know, people hadn't seen me playing so long. And it was the first game was like, okay, let me see the feel. What does it feel again? What are my legs doing? You know, so I knew the first game, okay, I got to get my legs more under me. So that week, I just really worked on like just getting a lot of shots up, just getting the legs used to it again. Because, you know, when you're working out one-on-one, that's not the same as getting up and down with the best players in the world. That's a totally different thing. Okay. So I think each game became definitely more comfortable with the feel of the game again, the hardwood.
How underrated is that aspect of like you can be in such good shape and just be working out on your own and nothing prepares you for an actual run in a game?
Yeah, it really is so different because it's just these girls are just going, they're explosive. And it's like, yeah, I can work hard one-on-one, but like it's just different with different movements and like you're playing with different players. So you got to adjust to how they move and what they're doing, you know? So I think that's the thing, you just learn it. It's like my brain and my body was remembering again everything. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I used to do that. I was like, oh, yeah, this is how I do this. So, and I'm glad, like, each game has been getting more comfortable and a lot better through time.
How did AU come onto your radar? Because it's been something that's been so cool seeing the last few years, players, especially in the WNBA, using this as an alternative to overseas play, staying stateside and getting their games in shape. How did it come about for you?
You know what? I think the last 2 years I was kind of waiting on an opportunity, and nothing was just coming. And it didn't matter what I accomplished. It didn't matter if I'm WTOP 25. It was like, okay, I can't keep sitting here waiting. I have to go out and try to reach out. So I started hitting up people, some of the vets, some of the GMs. Just like, hey, please, can I get an opportunity? And you know who's been great? Pokey Chapman has been great giving me great advice, and other people that just play the game. You know, it doesn't matter if they're coach or GM, whether it's phone, all those type of people, they play the game, they get it. They understand the ups and downs of the game. They understand the ins and outs. You know what I mean? And actually, Pokey suggested, hey, you should play AU. And I'm like, play AU? I'm like, that little league, that's how I was acting, like that little league I heard about. And she's like, this would be really good for you. So I started looking, I'm like, there's some really good girls playing this league. You know what I mean? And once we reached out and had the conversation, the way they treated me, AU treated me with so much love. Like, we want you, we want players of your caliber to come to help push the league in any way, just, you know, with your name and likeness alone. And they said, you know, we'll work you back in. They were like, we're not trying to kill you. Let's just work you back in. I was like, this could be really good. And to hopefully help me get a contract again and get back in shape. So that's kind of how it came about.
There's so much in all these conversations that we've had with AU players. It's that exactly where they say AU listens to our concerns, then they make these adjustments and they change things for us. And it really is a player-led league. But like you said, also, this is a great opportunity to get good competitive run in over the winter without having to learn a different language or go to change all your money out or find a new
Yeah,
place to live. So
I would say that.
yeah, how has that worked?
Yeah, because I remember I got caught and I was in New York and I got caught by TMZ and I remember I said this statement. I said I would love for girls to be able to make more money in our own country than having to go overseas. Not saying that overseas hasn't been good to us. It has been good to us. They've treated us very well. They've paid us very well. But I said this: the girls deserve that here too. I got so much negative backlash and just awful comments and stay in the kitchen. Women will never be this and. Nobody watches women's basketball. You guys don't deserve what the men have. But because you can't tell me Caitlin Clark, Candace Parker, their value is lower than a million, right? But that's the thing, it did grow. More people are watching. The salaries are increasing. You know what I mean? So that's why you just stand by your word and just know that I'm glad we have something like this. Because think about it, for these guys to put this league together for these women, not just basketball, lacrosse and other sports who are maybe less popular than basketball, they need it too. You know what I mean? They work hard. So it's good that the people are investing in women. It's there. And I always tell people, look at where we are without having the marketing as our male counterparts. We're still right there without all the marketing. We still don't have as much marketing and we're still so big. So it will work. This product is a great product.
It's such a frustrating thing that obviously you have lived through, and we have lived through to an extent too, being on the in the independent media space, where it's like whenever we see these graphics that say, look at these records being broken because we put a game on TV, or like we told a story. And it's like, yeah, if you put that effort and if you put your resources into covering these events and not just, give us a pre and a post game. Don't just show up for 90 minutes and throw something onto, a regional network, but like actually put it in front of people, that
And
the
people,
game speaks for itself.
oh my God, let me tell you, Miles, I remember it might have been 2011, 2012. It was the playoffs. It was Atlanta versus New York, and it was me and Cappy. I had 42, Cappy had 37. You talking about the best basketball you could ever watch? And when I looked, I'm like, oh, nobody's seen it. You know what I mean? It's so much good basketball here that is just put it out there in front of people. They will watch because it is good.
What have you kind of seen in the last couple of years? Because I feel like, yes, there are some things that are appropriately being kind of called out about the 2020 CBA not being the best for the players, but it still did turn the page for a lot of coverage and for some of these like PMA opportunities that players now have and opportunities for players to then stay stateside with AU. How have you seen this shift in the last four years or so, I'd say?
Yeah, I've been seeing the shift. Like I said again, 10 years ago, I made another comment. I said women's basketball, women's sports in general is like evolution. You see that evolution chart? You know what I mean? The guy turns into like the human. That's women's sports. It's like men's sports is established, but our game, our sports is like that evolution chart that just keeps going and going. Like that pink bunny. Remember we grew up on that bunny? Keep going and
That
going and going.
Energizer bunny.
Right, and it doesn't break, and it's just growing and growing and growing. And I knew it was going to get there. It was just a matter of time of continuing to push the brands, because there was a moment, yeah, guys, we were hit up the brands, and they were like, "No, WBA." It's like when they heard WBA, they got turned off, or we was hitting the brands, and then we had the statement from Draymond Green, "Y'all need to do more and hit up people." We're doing it. You didn't do your research, Draymond. Like we're just out here complaining. That's the thing. I don't want people to think we're out here complaining. We're not complaining because in the back end, we are working hard. We are pushing. We are, out there in the community with the kids. We are doing more for the community. We are more reachable. You get what I'm saying? But that part doesn't get recognized as much either, that we're out here in these communities, So, it's there. It's growing. Of course, what's going on now with NIL and with like obviously we hear a lot about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Social media has helped that. We didn't have a lot of social media back then. Different media companies are better, for people to see. It's right in front of your face now. You know what I mean? Like when I was in college, this thing called Twitter just came out. And I was like, what's Twitter? And they're like, hey, just make an account. They can keep up with you. I'm like, okay, what do I say? So, just not with the game, just technology helps the game too. So all of that plays in.
I think that we've seen that women's basketball players have done such a great job of marketing themselves. And unfortunately, so much of that I think comes from the fact that no one was doing it for you guys. So you kind of had to take that on.
We
But
had to.
when you talk about community, I mean, let's talk about your new show, because you have always been just standing up for Baltimore. And it's not just because no one else is telling your story, so you have to go out and tell it, but it's also because community is so important to you. So how has basketball put you in a position to create the show and to just give back to your hometown?
Yeah, and let me be honest about it. Like, it's easy when you have 50 million in the bank. Everybody will want to work for you. Everybody will get you movies, and it's easy to do it. Everybody want you're famous. You got more popularity. You know everybody to get in the door, right? These girls, these women, we don't have the popularity to get in the doors with the Netflixes and all those kind of people, and then we don't have 50 million to just have a team working for us to get movies and everything done. So we have to go out literally and advocate for ourselves. That's what I learned early on, because I didn't have, like you said, what Angel Reese and them have now. I felt like I was a caliber player like they were, but I didn't have like the outreach and the to reach everybody. So I said, I gotta advocate for myself. How can I do it? I know I'm gonna get some no's, but I know I'll get at least one yes. Start just doing things on my own. Yeah, some people laughed at me. Like, what are you doing? You're a basketball player. I gotta keep going. And now, I got music. I have a movie out, Lanier. And now I'm doing more shows and hosting, but I want to be the player to show these girls you can do this. Now if I can be the bridgeway to say, hey, you got a show idea? Okay, let's get it to Netflix. So I want to be the bridge that gap for these women athletes, because we don't have, the open doors so much as our male counterparts.
We actually had Izzy and Dori Harrison on the show last week,
Really?
and Dori was talking about a similar theme of honoring all your talents and being multifaceted and not just being pigeonholed into this identity as just a basketball player. So how has making this show, allowed you to explore another avenue in that way?
Oh yeah, for sure. So Ballin' in Baltimore is a show on Very Local, guys. You can stream it for free. It's just about showing Baltimore in another light. I'm born and raised there. That's where I got all my toughness from. Those guys toughen me up on the court. I grew up around Melo's era, Rudy Gay. They're my guys. There's this connotation of Baltimore, like it's like The Wire. And I say that in the show, and it's really nice. It's a beautiful city, and we get to show the artsy side of it, the foods, just how beautiful it is. And I know I have three cities. Atlanta, I live in Atlanta from playing there. Louisville is obviously my city, but born and raised in Baltimore, and I felt like I wasn't giving Baltimore enough love after living in Atlanta for so long. So I want to do something to give back to the community in Baltimore.
Baltimore is one of my favorite cities. It is so
Is
gorgeous.
it?
I love it.
Yeah.
Every time I go, I have friends there. It's the best. What is it? Because I've heard this from so many people, and I'm always curious to get an explanation. What is it about DMV Hoopers that's just different?
What is it about DMV Hoopers? It's something like, I'm gonna be honest. We had a me and Angel Reese had a camp we did at our high school, because we went to the same high school. And I was watching the young girls, and they were so hype. You didn't have to tell them to talk. Sometimes you gotta tell young girls, hey, try to talk or clap. They were hype. It's something instilled around that area where it's just, it doesn't matter, male, female, you're gonna ball. And sometimes even when, like, as women players, when we go play pickup with guys, there's this kind of ego thing sometimes, or it's two things guys do. They either play really, really hard against you because they don't want you to outshine them, or they don't play you at all because they don't want to look like. So, but in the D in the V, there is no gender. They treated me like, all right, you want to be out here? We're going to treat you like one of us. That's where I got my toughness. And I see that toughness in those young girls around DMV. It's just, I love that we don't carry that gender thing. If you can ball, you can ball. I'm picking you up.
That's awesome. One of our first episodes last spring, we had Lexi Brown on, and Lexi said to us, she was like, "I'm not messing with my money to go to LA Fitness to have these dudes think like, okay, I'm gonna show up a WNBA player." So like that's very refreshing to hear that there are communities that are not like that, where you get respect based on what you're doing on the court and not just because people are out there looking for some kind of weird status.
I think we've all been through it. I've been to LA Fitness one time and played, and never again. All because they show off. They want to just prove something. They try to elbow you or hurt you, and it's like, I get paid for this. You don't. I'm just here to get in shape, buddy. You can prove whatever you want to prove, but yeah, and the DMV is just like, it's so different with that. They respect it. It's a respect.
That's so cool. And you mentioned, yeah, you played for the Dream for a decade. So with community being so important to you, and then you go to Louisville, but then you get drafted down I-95 and you're spending a decade there. Could you describe the relationship that you were able to build with the city of Atlanta? Because that is, I'm sure, an adjustment to kind of place down roots somewhere new.
I remember first moving to Atlanta in 2009 and nobody knowing there was a WNBA team. To now, I can call anybody in Atlanta and get something done. I know the mayor. I know all the artists, the big artists that live there, 2 Chainz, Usher, T.I. I know everybody, just from having a great career in Atlanta. And Atlanta is a creative city. So, it allowed me to not just be a basketball player, but to be creative. And do different things outside the norm. And I thank Atlanta for that, it just helps you. Atlanta's a city that just helps you think out the box. There's so much creativity all around you. Tyler Perry Studios, the Avengers, what is it called? Marvel Studios is there. Like, it's just so much going on with creativity. It was ranked, like, I think number one creative city in this year. So that allowed me to just do all those fun things that I do and music, because it's a music's capital, one of the music capitals of the world.
When I think about like the percentage of my Spotify that's just music from Atlanta, it's sometimes it's staggering.
It's like all my, even if it's like somebody else, they recorded it in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For sure.
So when you were talking about, back in the day, you and Cappy going at it, and it wasn't even on SportsCenter, or people might not know about these legendary battles. That's so tragic, and also just one of the goals I think of what we try to do with this podcast is we want to hear stories. People deserve to know these stories, and it's such an honor to talk to you. So this is a very broad question, but like, what are some of your favorite WNBA memories? Do you have certain things that stick out in your career that just make you happy or that you're fond of looking back on?
I'm very fond of a lot of memories. I've been to the finals 4 times. That's a really, I feel like, a great accomplishment to have. Obviously I don't have a ring, but to have those experiences was really cool. I think great memories is like playing against legends that the kids see. Like, at least everybody knows Lisa Leslie, but I got to actually play against her, right? So I remember I was a rookie and I got switched off on her. She probably doesn't remember, but I do. And I got the mean elbow to the chest and I fell on the ground and she made the layup. And I'm just looking up like, oh my God. You know what I mean? So stuff like that is just like really, really cool to play with Tamika Catchings and Simone Augustus, the legends that these kids would just never, be able to just see again. You know what I mean? I had to just watch the highlights, but I got to play with them and against them. So that was really cool.
That's awesome. I feel like getting elbowed and a layup scored on you by Lisa Leslie is like it's a badge of honor. Like that's one of the coolest
That's an
things
honor.
that could happen when somebody scores on you.
Yeah, I was definitely fangirl. I was mad at the same time, but I was still fangirl. Like, oh my God, it's Lisa.
When we I want to get into a little bit of the actual basketball for a second, because this is a question I love asking basketball players. I love talking about defense and the process behind defense. And I would be remiss if we didn't have a defensive legend on the show. Seven all defensive teams, six all defensive first teams. So I have to ask, like, one of the fascinating things to me about defense is that I think a lot of it seems to be from the people I've talked to, effort and being in shape and just being able to go up against people, but it's more than that. It's a pride thing, it's strategy. What to you sticks out as like the keys to your defensive success over the years?
You know what? I think the key is that, because everybody says, oh, Angel, you're a bucket. You're a bucket, right? But when I grew up, I wasn't a bucket. My game, people don't know that I played defense. That was my game. I was a defensive player. And as I got older, I said, well, I need to start adding some offense to my game. I want to be able to score too. So I always had the defense because that was my game from a child on up. The offense came later. I just perfected it really well. So people just think like, oh, you're this great offensive player that happens to play defense. Like, because most offensive players, people think don't play defense, right? Like that. So people think, oh, you're this great offensive player that plays defense. That's so cool. Because I'm like, no, they don't know the true story. I'm a defensive player first, and my offense comes second. You know what I mean? Because if you see how my game was in college growing, I would get a lot of steals to score, I would get rebounds to score, or a block shot, you know. But I just said, you know, I got to really start working on my jump shot and going to the next level. So I added that later. So that was really my game.
Not to lean into the cliches that defense leads to offense, but when you're getting multiple steals a game, that's going to lead to a lot of easy offense the other way. What would you prefer to do? Would you prefer to get a steal and a stop on the defensive end or to hit a three-pointer?
I would rather steal and stop. Yeah.
I love
You
that. That's
know,
the
I
defensive
would still steal.
mindset that you have to like take it on yourself.
Yeah.
To stop the best player on the other team.
I
And
would
that's
want that any day.
liberation.
Yeah. Cause, you know, the kids now, they're going to say three pointer, you know, Steph Curry, look what you've done, Steph.
Look
But I come from
what
an
you've
old
done to this
school,
game.
right? So they love three, but me, I'm a little different. I would love to get the stop. I'm from old school.
I think it's like a rarity thing too, where like, all right, everyone's scoring now, like everyone's throwing up these three pointers, like you can hit all these great shots, but does anything get the crowd more engaged than just I'm putting the clamps on you, like getting a steal, getting a block? I feel like that is the most exhilarating play in basketball.
People love that too. Obviously, the oohs and ahs are more from the three pointer, especially a deep three. But when you get those stops, especially a whole bunch in a row, like then they're like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? So it can give the same effect in kind of a different way.
Yeah, you feel the energy in the building, and it
Yeah.
builds and it builds and it builds because it creates tension. So we are big fans of defensive stuff. Seeing somebody lock someone up for the entirety of a shot clock and force a terrible thing, I prefer to watch that than someone just extending past the defense and putting up a shot.
Yeah, because why do a lot of people say, oh, I like watching the NBA during the playoffs? Because they're actually playing some D. That's what we want to see. D somebody up. You know?
Yeah, we heard all the conversations about that NBA All-Star game where they scored whatever 600 points, or I don't even
Yeah.
remember. So people
Yeah.
are over the offense without defense. It
And
felt like kind of a
people miss
circus.
like, yeah, and people miss like what Kobe said, like people want to see the best pickup game in the world. And people play harder in pickup. You play harder, and if they would go to UCLA and play, they would play harder there and get mad and all D up than in the All-Star game. Give us a little bit more in the All-Star game, guys. Just a little bit.
Well, to transition here is, as Owen mentioned at the top of your very stacked bio, you're a two-time Olympic gold medalist, and we know you've played overseas a ton, but I feel like London and Rio, that probably hits different when you're wearing those USA colors and the USA across your chest. So that's the ultimate competitive level. What's a lasting memory you have from either or both of those teams?
Both very beautiful memories, and man, I would have loved to gotten one more. But I think the main thing is the journey I've enjoyed with that. Obviously, putting the gold medal on your neck, but it's the journey that gets you there, and just enjoying who's around you. You know, learning. Okay, what does Diana do to be great? You know, I can watch Sue Bird like right in front of me. What do they do? What does Tamika Catchings do to be great? I have all these stars in front of me that are the best in the world, and I can sit and watch and learn them, their habits, what they do to be the best. And there's nothing else like that. And then the men's team too, they're right there next to us. So I'm waking up. Okay, how does Kobe move? Well, I'm watching him in the gym. Huh. I'm learning. I'm just learning. And that was the best news.
What was the difference between that first Olympics experience where you're kind of just taking it all in, and then that second one where it's kind of cool that these are happening, every 4 years. So it's really a benchmark for how things have changed from one game to the next, but where you then return and are able to then, be able to know what to expect and maybe be in the moment a little bit more than the first time where you're just kind of overwhelmed by the experiences.
I think both experiences, I sat in the moment. You know what I mean? I think, you know, I commend for that because most young kids are just going and going. I do feel like I sat in the moment. The difference is, which I'll just probably just be, you know, the players, you know. Obviously in 2016, what we had Deladon and different players than before. 2012 was more, I was with some of the older players, Swin Cash, You know what I mean? And they were retired by 16. So I think it was like a new set of players to learn from and a younger group. And then I was getting older. So I wasn't the young one like in 2012. I was more like, all right, I'm middle tier now, vet by 2016. So there's some young ones behind me watching me now. You know what I mean? Because one of the young ones was Breonna Stewart. You wouldn't believe, like, during 16, she was kind of like the last one coming off the bench. Not Breonna Stewart, right? But she was the young one during that time. So now she's the head honcho now. So you just, it's a trickle-down effect of who comes in, you grow up, you know, the next one come in. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Well, as we wrap up here, I wanted to get back to the music because I love asking about off-court stuff and it's such a part of your life. How long has music been a part of your life, and when did you decide that you wanted to try your hand at actually making music?
I started music in about 2011, and then I released my first single. It was called "Baby, I'm a Star," and everybody was like, "What the heck are you doing?" Everybody was making fun of me. I would come to the gym, the girls were making fun of me. They were like, "Girl, they're like, you really trying to put out a song?" And I was like, "Yeah, I like it. It's so much fun. I just liked it." Just started going to the studio, and I just found it as another therapy outside of basketball. And then I enjoyed like creating something that didn't exist. And now it's something. I really love that feeling of something that was just zero and now it's something. And I just kept going and going and going. And obviously, I mean, the music didn't get tons of attention, but I was just more so had the mentality of if anybody likes it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. It's all good. I'm just doing this because I enjoy it. But then, hey, it started getting a little more popular and I got my first placement on NBA 2K. And I got some movies interested in my music and some sync agents now and that are interested in me. So it just goes to show you to encourage the young kids. Don't listen to what people say. You just keep going. If you enjoy something, you keep doing it and it can go places.
That's awesome. Well, my final question here, I'm going to steal a question from Dori Harrison because she asked a brilliant question. So I was asking her about playing music, and she turns to Izzy and she says, if you put your Spotify or Apple Music or whatever on shuffle, who are the four artists most likely to pop up on your shuffle? So I'm going to throw it to you now.
One would definitely be Lauryn Hill. She's really, really good. And then, like, my shuffle is just, it's so international because I've lived overseas in Turkey, I've lived overseas in Russia. I have those kind of songs that I've adapted to. I like a lot of pop songs. I like a lot of international stuff. You know, I'm very broad and open.
That's so
I
cool.
love
I
it.
mean, you had so many experiences and being able to kind of take from all of that, especially music, I think is such a beautiful way to kind of continue all that. Normally we hear people talk about food, where food is something they can bring back with them and that they've absorbed. But I love just the culture that you can kind of take in with music too. So that's really
Oh, for
cool.
sure. Absolutely. You can just add it to, look, I put my little highlights, just add my little music and keep it moving.
Well, Angel, this has been an absolute honor, and thank you so much for joining us. Just a fantastic conversation. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Anytime. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks, Angel.